Merry Christmas. We said the service would start at 10:37 and a half. We didn't mean that half the congregation should come, but so be it. I'm not much of an outdoorsy kind of a person. I've gone camping twice in my life. The first time I went was because my daughter Demery, who was at that stage of her life, probably five, had been watching Barney on TV, and Barney went camping, and so she wanted to go camping. So I went to Sports Authority and bought one of those tents, one of those great ones, you throw it up in the air and it lands and poof, there's your tent. So we went down to John Pennekamp State Park and spent a night there, and if you've never been there, it's a beautiful place, beautiful campground, and we had a great time. Well, we put the tent away, and there it sat in the garage for a couple of years, and then she decided on Memorial Day weekend she'd like to go do it again, a little Dad and Demery thing. So we just threw everything in the car, and without any advance reservations, headed on down to the Keys, thinking I would call on my cell phone and make a reservation on the way. Well, you can't do that. The only place that we could find was what they call a mixed campground, which means they accepted people with tents, but also accepted people with Winnebagoes and everything else. We arrived down there in Key Largo, and we go to our assigned spot, our little plot, and we are surrounded by skyscrapers of these Winnebagoes on every side. And here you have these huge things that looks like people are ready to live there in their mansions for the rest of their lives, and our little throw-it-up-in-the-air tent right in the middle. It was daunting, to say the least. It was a little bit overwhelming and maybe even a little scary with us in this little tent, especially when the storm hit. And I'm literally holding down the tent with my feet in my hands so it doesn't blow over and we all get soaked. The gospel tells us today, the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. Literally, it means has pitched his tent with us. For me, that is an incredible image that even in the midst of storm, in the midst of all of these things around, there is God right with us. It's December 26th, the day after. In some cultures, this would be called Boxing Day. In some cultures, it's Take All Your Gifts Back Day. And in a real sense, it can be for a lot of folks a day of what's called buyer's remorse, where you suddenly realize that what was all the impulse purchases on the credit cards that went far beyond what you could afford, now you start to wonder, oh, I really shouldn't have done that. And even if it was something you could afford and maybe even something you needed, there is that thing we go through that you have this sort of psychological regret that we go through. I think we go through it spiritually as well. Many of us make these decisions because of the love that we are experiencing in the Christmas season and the people who are usually just too difficult to deal with. Somehow we find a way to deal with them, and we make these resolutions how we are going to be better with them as family and friends and neighbors. But then the reality sinks in, and it's usually about now, the day after. Maybe if you were here on Christmas, you made a decision based on my sermon of what you were going to leave at the door. Well, now the reality is going to start hitting in. And we might regret those decisions because the harsh reality starts to hit us that this is not easy. We never hear about the day after in the Nativity story, do we? But if we did, I'm sure there'd be some real harsh realities that set in. Joseph, you better change his diaper. No, I changed the last one. It's your turn. and on they probably would have gone. Reality of a family. But what's so good about this is the fact that we are given this particular gospel on this day. Because John's gospel is written for those who already believe, to encourage, to strengthen, to reinforce their faith. So this is the Christmas story for us. And in this particular version, in John, we don't have the little baby sitting in a manger. We have this incredibly transcendent Jesus that John uses those words from the beginning of Genesis, in the beginning, just like the Bible starts, to remind us, to take us back there and to say, guess what? Jesus was there then. And just as in that beginning of the Exodus story, God creates light, there was Jesus, the light. He's not wanting us to miss this idea of this child in the manger. Broaden your horizons to realize that this Jesus has been there from before time, and he has pitched that tent with us. That's pretty amazing. What I want to concentrate on today is this idea of light and darkness. Because I think if we want to use that image, these difficulties that we have, the huge Winnebagos and storms and everything else that surround us and can make our life difficult to follow through in the light, we have to remember that if there wasn't the darkness, you wouldn't see the light. Somehow I think we need the darkness around so that we are able to focus upon the light itself. That can be a hard thing. I ran across a story. I like to, at this time of year, look at these different Christmas stories that are in these books, like Chicken Soup for the Soul kind of things, those kinds of things that sort of just warm your heart, but really do make a strong point about our life following Christ. And in this particular story, Moss Hart, who was the great playwright, in his autobiography, he tells this story about his relationship with his father. He had been raised mostly by a grandfather and an aunt, but then lost them, and now he is with his parents. And he talks about this episode with his dad. This is what he says. Christmas was out of the question. We were barely staying alive. On Christmas Eve, my father was very silent during the evening meal. Then he surprised and startled me by turning to me and saying, "Let's take a walk." He had never suggested such a thing before, and moreover, it was a very cold winter's night. I was even more surprised when he said as we left the house, "Let's go down to 149th and Westchester Avenue." My heart leapt. That was the section where all the big stores were, where at Christmas time, open push carts full of toys stood packed end to end for blocks at a stretch. On other Christmas Eves, I had gone there with my aunt, and from our tour of the carts, she had gathered what I wanted the most. My father had known of this, of course, and I joyously concluded that this walk could mean only one thing. He was going to buy me a Christmas present. On the walk down, I was beside myself with delight. It had been a bad year for me, the year of my aunt's leaving, and I wanted a Christmas present terribly. Not a present merely, but a symbol, a token of some sort. I needed some sign from my father or mother that they knew what I was going through and cared for me as much as my aunt and grandfather did. I'm sure they were giving me such mute signs as they could, but I did not see them. The idea that my father had managed a Christmas present for me in spite of everything filled me with a sudden peace and lightness of heart I had not known in months. Well, we hurried on, and the lights down on 149th Street in Westchester seemed to be the brightest lights I'd ever seen. Tugging at my father's coat, I started down the line of push carts. There were all kinds of things I wanted. But since nothing had been said by my father about buying a present, I would merely pause before a pushcart to say, "Look at that chemistry set. There is a stamp album. Look at that printing press." Each time, my father would pause and ask the pushcart man the price. Then, without a word, we would move on to the next pushcart. Once or twice, he would pick up a toy of some kind and look at it, and then at me, as if to suggest that this might be something I might like. But I was 10 years old, and a good deal beyond just a toy. My heart was set on a chemistry set or a printing press. There they were on every pushcart we stopped at, but the price was always the same. And soon I looked up and saw that we were nearing the end of the line. Only one or two pushcarts remained. My father looked up too, and I heard him jingle some coins in his pocket. In a flash, I knew it all. He had gotten together about 75 cents to buy me a Christmas present, and he hadn't dared say so in case there was nothing to be had for so small a sum. As I looked up at him, I saw a look of despair and disappointment in his eyes that brought me closer to him than I had ever been in my life. I wanted to throw my arms around him and say, "It doesn't matter. I understand. This is better than a chemistry set or a printing press. I love you." But instead, we stood shivering beside each other for a moment, then turned away from the last two pushcarts and started silently home. I don't know why the words remained choked up within me. I didn't even take his hand on the way home, nor did he take mine. We were not on that basis. Nor did I ever tell him how close to him I felt that night, that for a little while the wall between father and son had crumbled away, and I knew that we were two lonely people struggling to reach out to each other. We could say that that story ends there, if you want to emphasize the darkness, or we could say that the story begins there, if we want to emphasize the light in the darkness. There's darkness all around us. There are difficulties we all face. It's what we want to emphasize that counts. Moss Hart chose to emphasize the light. Took a long time. About 40 years later, in his book, he tells this story, visiting his then 91-year-old father in a nursing home. On Christmas Eve, I sat in his living room, and while my wife chatted with the nurse, I sat on a sofa across the room with my father, showing him the pictures of his two grandchildren. Suddenly, I felt his hand slip into mine. It was the first time in our lives that either of us had ever touched the other. No words were spoken, and I went right on turning the pages of the picture album, but my hand remained over his. A few years before, I might have withdrawn my hand after a moment or two, but now my hand remained. Nor did I tell him what I was thinking and feeling. The moment was enough. It had taken 40 years for the gulf that separated us to close. We can be in a campground surrounded by storms and Winnebagoes. We can be surrounded by so much of darkness. But the fact that he has pitched his tent with us should enable us to have the courage to emphasize the light and take those actions and those risks that will enable us to achieve more of his light. Do it now, because life is too short. Amen.
Prayers of the people are found on page 3. Let us pray for the church and